This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Lawrence Francis from Interpreting Wine. How are you, mate?
I'm very well, mate. I'm very well.
You're a podcaster.
Is it your fellow podcaster? Absolutely.
And from the British podcaster
That's it.
As
yeah,
well.
Yeah.
So there's
London
two of us,
two of us
here now. And I think, I don't know, we're the only ones still going. I think there's like been some shorter series-based ones. But from the UK, I can't think of anybody else who's still banging them
out. I mean, I know of a few others, not in any particular order. I know there has been one called Bring Your Own. And that, again, as the name kind of suggests, the premise there is they interview usually, I think three people in the wine trade, and each one of them will bring along a wine. I think they often serve them blind,
and then
they have sort of a
that's quite good fun.
Bit of a chat about the the bottles, and obviously you get to taste them and drink them together. There's also one called Batonnage as well, which is Fiona Patterson and Liam Stevenson. I know they do that together. I saw something on Twitter the other day about them about to release another series of that.
Yeah. Oh, you got Ollie.
Got Ollie, of course, who does his in series as well. He doesn't release them in chunks. Although now Richard Hemming, who was producing his podcast, is now, I believe, over in Singapore. So I don't know if it's going to continue in another guise or what the story kind of is there. But, yeah, from my point of view, those are kind of the main ones, UK-based certainly, that come to mind when I think about, wine podcasting at the moment.
Okay, and Interpreting Wine, you've only been going for 2 years, but I was looking, you've done 341 interviews. My God, I've been going for 13 years. I'm up to 560-something. So
catching.
I tell you what, I would say by about 3 o'clock today, you have passed me, mate.
getting there. Yeah, I think it's a good observation. I mean, I produced – well, take it back a bit. I mean, it actually started in 2017, so I speak Spanish, and I was living over in Spain in 2017. And I was living in Madrid. I absolutely love Madrid, and
yeah,
I was
nice
like
place.
Beautiful place and great wines. You know, very close by there, Sierra de Gredos in particular. And I was I was looking for a way to stay on and spend more time in Madrid, improve my Spanish, get more, you know, in tune with the culture over there. And actually, an opportunity came up at a tapas tour company for somebody to run their social media in Madrid, and it could be done in English, so that's a pretty rare thing. And that was kind of really the short-term push that I needed to get started. So the name, even Interpreting Wine, was because I was traveling to Spanish winemakers, often who didn't speak English, so I was interviewing them, touring with them in Spanish, then getting back home, interpreting translating their words, and then actually narrating the content of my tour in English.
Gosh, that's a lot of work, isn't it?
I didn't realize at the start. I thought this will be fun.
Is that show number one?
Shows number 1 to 8 take that format.
Okay.
And unsurprisingly, I completely ran out of steam.
Yeah.
I did do some episodes in Madrid, but most of them were in places, as I say, like Penedès and Catalonia. And so there was even the traveling to get there. There was a traveling to get back. Then there was a travel. It's real. Yeah, I mean, pretty much I chose all of the hardest barriers that I possibly could.
Oh, my God.
Right at the start.
I do. I've done some podcasts with people with translators. And it's the editing, you know, you will lose a day just trying to edit out something when you've got a translator there. So, oh, my God, I can't imagine that. That'd be awful.
So then, that kind of ran out of steam, really.
And now I understand your format. Because basically you don't really appear on the format, do you?
Yeah. This is it. I mean, and then say,
like, what's the least I can get involved in now? Don't take it wrongly, but it's
a
different
format. I started at one extreme, and now it's just everything has gotten simpler and simpler. I mean, even as we were just discussing sort of before we started, you know, I do as little editing as I can get away with. And I think actually if you do edit out every little crutch word or every little hesitation, and then the person ends up sounding robotic and it doesn't actually sound like them. So I kept to the single mic format really back in 2018 when I really started. That was kind of my second wave without all the sort of language barriers and that sort of thing. But I was based in London where I live and where I'm from, so I didn't have as easy access to wineries. You know, it wasn't so easy as it was over in Spain to get to wineries, but I had other people I had, of course, sommeliers, I had restaurateurs, and then London being London, I had all of the people who were coming through and bringing their wines through, you know, from all over the world. And at least, I would say, every sort of, you know, year, 18 months, you get, you know, all of the big players are going to come through London. And it's then kind of a case of, who do you want to go for? It then, then became this sort of abundance, and being in London, being located close to London, meant that I could reach those people whenever I kind of needed to.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. That's the nice thing about London. I record normally in chunks, as I was saying. Yeah. You know, we're at the Wine to Wine conference here at the moment. I'm recording like crazy at the moment, and I'll do another big spate of recording in May, and then I just do the odd one here and there, and things that you can't get hold of. So, yeah, London's quite good for that, because you get everybody.
Totally, totally. And yeah, and I guess so something of the format. I mean, it is a different format. I mean, you've got two mics here. So, I mean, I'm very, very open about all the equipment that I use. And actually, you know, coming here to speak at Wine to Wine, I mean, one of my objectives, and my main objective really of being on the panel, is I want to get one person who's in that audience. I want to get one of them to give podcasting a try. I want them to actually, as I say, come onto the field, you know, come and have a kick around. So I've actually uploaded, and it's available now at interpretingwine.com/kit, everything that I use, from the mic to the accessory kit to the batteries to the editing software, just laid out step by step, so that I hope, as I say, one of those people that's there in that audience will say, oh, okay, you know, if he can do it, you know, and can do it so frequently and can really, you know, build an audience and build credibility off the back of that, then why can't we do it? And we're winemakers. We've got access to our own experience, our own expertise. So, I want to get one person to give it a try.
Okay, fair enough. Your show's vary in length. There's no sort of, I saw some of the shows were like 20 minutes long. I saw one that was over an hour and a bit long.
Yeah.
You know, what drives it? Is it more just what the person's saying and if it's interesting, or?
Yeah, sometimes I don't really have a choice. And I think, that maybe this would guide, and this would be an overview of the show, because, as you say, you know, 340 odd shows, but actually the format does change quite a lot. So there will be, you know, us sitting here, it would be, you know, a mic passing backwards and forwards. That's a one-to-one interview. I've gone on various press trips, and one of the things that I really like to bring back from those press trips are actually recordings of tastings and tours. So probably where I had the most access to tours and that sort of information and that sort of content was over in New York. So I went up to the Finger Lakes last July. Mm-hmm. I was touring around, and pretty much at every winery that we were touring, I would clip on the lav mic onto the person touring and let the listener follow along with us, let them be a part of that tour and hear the history of the winery and the winemaking techniques direct from the person who was doing the tour.
That's quite good, because the nice thing about that is it's something that they've said probably a million times, so they know they've got it down pat. You know, they know exactly the key word to say where, and so it's nice and slick.
So some of those, people sometimes they, you know, verbal diarrhea, and they go on for 40 minutes, and that's great, because I think people self-select. You know, if somebody is naturally engaging and is just funny and is, you know, totally on a roll, then that 40 minutes can just fly by.
Yeah.
You know, whereas, you know, it might be another tour, other tours that I've done, and I've been a lot shorter, or it might just be, you know, I've been at a conference or at a tasting. You know, that's one of the factors that often drives those shorter episodes, is that, you know, I try to be respectful of the winemaker's intention when they go to tastings. I believe their primary motivation is to engage with people who might buy their wines and pour the wines and talk about the wines, and probably not to speak to me. So I do, you know, give people just that option to come and have a 10-minute chat. But one of the things that I notice is that when you've got 10 minutes, get through. You know, a lot of information can come out in that 10 minutes. It can be quite an efficient way to get your message out there and get your word out there.
What are the interviews that you like to record?
My favourite format to...
Not necessarily format, but, for me, I try and get a cornucopia. That's a good word, isn't it? Channeling Bonnie Johnson. I can't even spell my own name, mate. I like a big, we always have a big range, but yeah. The shows I really like are the geeky, science-y ones, because they're the stuff I'm learning the most, you know, so they're the things I like, but what's the sort of things you like?
Yeah, well, I'll go with that, actually, because you've reminded me of an episode that happened, so I even remember the number. It's an episode 110, and I've not done this before, I've not done it since, but it was actually a conversation between two winemakers. So we had the winemaker, well, the marketing / winemaker from from Mineclang, and then we also had from the Scolium project in the US, and those two sitting together talking about, you know, the geeky stuff, like, you know, sulfur and this edition of sulfur and the other edition of sulfur and what it and actually having the wines in front of us as the evidence, really, you know, and all of the analysis was there laid out on the sheet in front of us, and we were able to kind of listen in, really. So the conversation was between Abe and Nicholas, as I say, of Scolium Project and Mineclang, respectively, and it was an invited sort of trade audience, and we were listening in. I mean, you hear on the recording that people sort of would pitch in with questions. But essentially, we were down in the cellar. We were like the flies on the wall down in the cellar with these two winemakers having a chat, really, and at times just getting super geeky and just bringing up these points that, you don't get to hear in that depth. And that episode ran to more than an hour long. And I remember I was like, is there going to be interest in this? Is this going too niche? Am I alienating a lot of the people who've helped me to get to episode 110? And, I remember, feeling really unsure about posting it. But then I was like, sod it. Let me just get it up there. And, it's actually, even that, the length was a thing. Oh, shall I chop it up into portions? But no, people loved it. You know, it probably absolutely delighted a smaller percentage of the usual shows.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they were then quite vocal. They were contacting me. They were tweeting and helping to promote it. And actually ended up being, one of the sort of more popular ones, I would say.
I
was like scared that nobody would listen and that it was actually kind of off style.
I haven't heard that one, but I've heard a few of them. And, okay. So I'll have a listen to 110.
Yeah, 110, yeah.
That's it. You even remember it.
Some of them, not all of them. Test me, please.
Well, in 3 minutes into show 327, you said...
The evidence, It's like going on the blockchain, isn't it? It's like it's on there forever, always on the record. So
what's your wine background? Is it... because the shows I've listened to has mainly been the other person talking, and I haven't really heard you...
Yeah.
Put yourself forward into it. Yeah. So I'm not sure. You said that sometimes you do shows where you're interviewing and talking to people like we're doing now. But, you know, what's your background? Do you have qualifications? Do you drink a lot? Are you alcoholic? You know?
Exactly, yeah. Choose your area. When I first started, I had zero qualifications whatsoever. So
This is in Madrid. Yeah.
In Madrid, and then again in London. Even beyond that, when I was doing the research for who I should have on in January 2018, I just didn't know who anyone was. You know, any of the names that you'll see on there, that, you know, the kind of, you know, famous winemakers and restaurateurs and sommeliers and masters of wine. My knowledge was zero. I just didn't know who anybody was, and it was then just a case of, okay, let's research this, you know, I started really in that January phase more than the Spain start. I started that January phase as a means of saying, okay, I'm interested in wine. I traditionally don't learn so well from a sort of a textbook approach, you know, even, you know, learning Spanish kind of in the field, you know, not in a classroom. And I figured, okay, this could be just a really great way to just learn. It would get me, as I always try to do, and I still try to do, get me around people that know a lot more than I do about the subject and bring them value. Because, as you say, there aren't and there still aren't that many wine podcasts out there. So people were generally pretty receptive to this total unknown, this total random kind of emailing out of the blue and saying, "Hey, do you want to be on my podcast?" And people with some, you know, some significant standing in the wine trade and restaurant trade, they were very, very open. And I'll always be, you know, very appreciative to those people for kind of coming on and giving it a chance. And then, yeah, the only qualification that I have, the only formal qualification I have is level two in WSET, which I did mid last year, sort of okay. July, August. And my sort of, yeah, my stock, I guess, yeah, response and the thing that where my mind is really when I go to thinking about qualifications and what works for me in terms of learning is that I'm actually a lot better doing the qualification when I've already got the knowledge, yeah. if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think...
So you
I think,
turn up, you know everything, you know.
That's it. And then I feel like I can actually enjoy it and, you know, who knows, maybe not spit all of the wines when I go into the tasting. So, yeah, level three, I think, you know, it's certainly something that is on my yeah wish list for next year. But I feel like when I've got the knowledge and when yeah. I'm kind of already there, yeah. then that will be... Kind of a box ticking exercise in a way, but also just an organization exercise of just organizing the knowledge that's kind of been, yeah, I've been inundated with in the course of recording all those interviews.
The nice thing about some sort of structured learning, you know, level two is good, but level three is excellent because it, as you say, it puts things into boxes.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm not, you know, I'm reasonably academic, but not. I'm not an academic by any stretch.
Yeah.
But what I like is to be able to go because I can't remember anything. I've got a memory like a goldfish.
Yeah.
Maybe a goldfish is a little bit better than me. I can't remember stuff, but if I can understand the principles, I can derive things and I can remember it that way. So for me, I always find that once I understand the sort of theory, everything else just sort of falls out of it.
Yeah.
And you get these boxes and you go, okay, I understand that because they're doing this and that means that and that means that and that means that. So instead of learning a lot of detail, I just learn what that means and then I just apply it to everything else. So I don't think I could go in much further in my wine qualifications just because I can't remember enough stuff to get someone to do a Master of Wine. I just don't think I'd remember enough people's names and quotes that you need for the essay. I just can't remember that. Whereas I can understand science, and science makes things easy for me. So.
Gotcha. Yeah, yeah. It's, I think it's you'll probably talk to 100 people, and you'll get maybe a blended mix of those, and or different learning styles. I just think, I don't think there's just one approach that suits everybody. And actually, I think I've done one of the formats that I have done with the podcast is actually involving the WSET and in using some of their expertise, to again just share and learn for me and then also get the knowledge out there. So I think one of the series that I'm most proud of and actually people have been listening and talking a lot about was when I went down to the WSET and sat with Christine Marsiglio, who's just become an MW, and she was in the sort of later phases of, I think, waiting for her scores to come in when we recorded. But what we did was she had a bottle of cava, a bottle of Prosecco, and a bottle of champagne, and then assessed each of those according to at level four, so in preparation for the Unit 5 sparkling exam. And the idea there, and people really got into this, and I saw them sort of tagging me and posting about this online, was that 12 pounds bottle of Carver, I think it was, you had access to that in the UK, certainly. You could go to Sainsbury's, I think it was, pick that up, go at home, and pop on the podcast and taste and listen along and do that kind of calibration that I think is so difficult to do.
The otherwise. Nice thing is these wines are non-vintage usually as well, so it doesn't lose its timeliness. Sometimes if you do a podcast and you've got a wine from a particular vintage, then the nice thing about Carver and Champagne is they drive out any vintage variation, or they try to anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. They're all three were NVs, and that, especially the Champagne one, I think it kind of maybe it resonated with people that just like Champagne. But then, if you're preparing for the Unit 5 exam, that's going to be, I think, a helpful way to prepare and to just get your palate in tune with somebody who is, as I say, a recent MW and, as to my memory, was writing the Level 1 and Level 2 for the WSET.
Oh, I like that. I might link to that.
That's cool. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, cool.
Cool. Cool.
Can't remember the episode numbers.
That's right. I'll find it. I've got a search facility. So you're in London now. We're at 1-1 now.
Yes.
But you're based in London.
Yeah.
What's the plan going forward? You know, are you, because I don't see any advertising on your show or anything like that. So what's driving all your interest?
Yeah, this is great. I mean, we're about to go onto a panel, and I'm actually remembering all of the notes that I have made for the panel through answering your questions. But yeah, I really, with the podcast, yeah, a couple of things. I mean, yeah, I do want to monetize it. You know, I don't think I've produced 220 shows last year for my health. You know, it is with an aim to establishing myself and my place in the marketplace and providing value, and that resulting in a business, in an actual kind of going concern. So in terms of then how I see myself and where I see that monetization is, I don't want to ever have to put a paywall between myself and the listeners, you know, because that's, I guess, one model. You either you go to a subscription model through something like YouTube. I know there's a platform called Luminary. I've not looked too much into it, but you know, there are these sort of premium kind of paid approaches that you can take. I don't really want to do that. I don't even really necessarily want to kind of get the Patreon tip jar out. You know, if I can at all avoid it, because I think actually my view, rightly or wrongly, is don't put any barrier whatsoever there, and actually viewing myself really as a magazine, you know, as somewhere that people go for information. I'm a free magazine, you know. I'm the Metro or the Evening Standard at the Metro in London. I'm not going to the shop and buy the FT, or you know, I'm not a paid medium, but that then has a lot of value, I think, because it, as I say, it doesn't put any blocks between people wanting to come and listen, people that might be in different parts of the world, people that might be, you know, on much lower salaries or not able to afford what to us might seem, oh, that's £3 a month or that's £4 a month. It's like, to a lot of people, to the majority of the planet, that's a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I would actually much rather build the audience, build the value, and then actually monetize the regions and monetize the people who are making the wines, and work with them to understand and to use my channel to reach the people that they're trying to reach. You know, I'm quite close to who's listening. It's a young, engaged audience, a lot of trade, it's a lot of front of house, sommeliers, restaurateurs. You know, these are the people who are kind of coming up to me when I'm going to those trade tastings. And I think they're becoming more and more difficult to reach. You know, if you want to influence them as a wine producing region or a wine producing country, I think you've got to be very mindful of where these people are spending their time. That it's not, you can just put an advert on page 63 of Decanter and you're going to reach them necessarily. You know, those people may not buy Decanter, or they may not read to page 63. You know, not picking on Decanter, but I think that the point goes for all of those types of magazines. I'm not sure necessarily that people always get the best return on investment when they look at those. And I just think, I'm not saying, okay, just go into podcasting, that's a panacea, but I think, yeah, put it as part of your marketing mix. And in the same way that you would pay for access to any other marketing channel, then you should pay somebody like myself to work with you to create a series that brings value to the listeners and gets you your marketing objectives at the same time.
Well, now that people know, hopefully they'll...
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
Well, just before we finish up, what's your favourite interview?
The favourite one that I've done? Wow, that's literally, that is the, you know, favourite child
yeah,
question,
yeah, yeah.
Isn't it?
I know my favourite child. I tell the other one all the time, she's not.
That's it. You're
I'm hard,
you're
man.
I'm hard, man.
No, I'm just kidding, it's a joke.
I think, well, I got to say, I mean, I should be, you know, spreading the love around. But I got to say, just the most kind of groundbreaking one really was episode 40, was when I had Michael Sager on. And, you know, he was somebody who, you know, I think was, along with Charlotte Wild, was very influential in, you know, creating Sager and Wild, growing the wine scene in London, drinking in a different way, making it more accessible. And interestingly, all of that was like before my time. That was before I really had a strong interest in wine. So to be able to kind of tap into that and tap into, you know, he is an absolute natural for the medium. You know, he literally just put it there. I mean, that's one where I literally didn't get a word in edgeways.
Even when you tried to.
That's it. And that's, and interestingly as well, why that one really stands out for me is that lightly as I edit, I always have to edit. That is still to this day, number 300 plus, that is still the only interview that I have not touched a single second of.
Okay.
He starts and then he stops about 42 minutes later. And I did not, and I even helped that. Yeah, there's all of that stuff. But at one point, the mic falls over and you hear it kind of falling over. But I thought that was kind of just part of that. You're sitting with us at the table and you're just having that chat. You know, I want people to feel like you're among friends. And that's the first episode where I can really remember people just like coming up to me. And so many people have quoted that as the first one they listened to. And I think that was, it was a real breakthrough. And, you know, I'll never sort of, you know, forget that as a moment in time. Really.
Okay. So if you haven't listened to Interpreting Wine, you want to listen to show 40 and show 110 to start off with and then enjoy it. Yeah.
There we go.
Brilliant. All right. Well, I think we'll wrap it up there, Lawrence. Cheers very much.
Perfect. Yeah. Great stuff.